Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Not too far from here. If you go down 6th Street, once you get on the other side of Broadway, then you could have found me anywhere between 4th, 5th, and 6th Street.
Army veteran Roy Brown tells us about the program that got him off the streets. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, February 23rd, 2012. I'm Benjamin Gottlieb. Thank you so much for being with us today. LA commuters taking the Metro Blue Line this morning saw major delays caused by a power outage. Metro authorities attributed the problem to a fault in the electrical system that powers the trains. 8 Blue Line trains are now running every 20 minutes between Wilmington and downtown LA, but commuters should still expect delays of up to 20 minutes. Leaders of some of the country's biggest businesses gathered today to support Home for the Good. The initiative aims to end homelessness, both chronic and veteran, in Los Angeles over the next 5 years by placing thousands of the city's homeless in permanent housing. Nick Edmonds has the story.
United Way of Greater Los Angeles has teamed up with the Chamber of Commerce to form Home for Good.
We say it's a five-year plan, but really it's a change and shift in culture. We can permanently eliminate chronic and veteran homelessness.
That's John Dusenberry of UPS, one of 21 business leaders who make up the Home for Good task force. Home for Good has reported gratifying success after its first year, moving over 3,000 homeless into permanent housing, which is still only a fraction of the city's problem.
Los Angeles County continues to be the homeless capital of the United States, with 51,000 people sleeping on our streets every night.
People just like Roy Brown, an Army veteran who used to live out in the cold, a bit too close for comfort.
Not too far from here. If you go down 6th Street, once you get on the other side of Broadway, then you could have found me anywhere between 4th, 5th, and 6th Street. Probably in a hotel or a bathroom, sleeping for the evening.
Home for Good believes in a housing-first model. Panel member Carrie Morrison explains.
You put somebody in housing before everything else, and you recognize once they have a roof over their head, then
children
you start
difficult
addressing
witnesses.
All of their other needs, whether it's sobriety, access to benefits that they might be eligible for, whether it's from the VA or disability, but just get them under a roof.
Housing may not be the only factor, but Home for Good believes it's the most important. And for people like Roy Brown, it's this first step that makes this program so special.
We all are human, and I have relapsed after going through programs. I think the concept that if you relapse, then you have to get kicked out of here and wait 30 days or 90 days only gave me the idea, let me go and use some more. Don't nobody want me, don't nobody care about me, and they're kicking me back out.
With the help of top business leaders and Home for Good, people like Roy Brown will never have to feel unwanted again, but rather, they will be greeted with open doors and a roof over their heads. Nick Edmonds, Annenberg Radio News.
Members of the Screen Actors Guild protested SAG's proposed merger with the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists this afternoon. Conrad Wilton has the story.
Dozens of SAG members rallied today outside of SAG's headquarters on Wilshire Boulevard. They're protesting a merger that they say will cost SAG members pensions and health benefits. Warren Berlinger has been a SAG member for 65 years.
So when you walk into a room and you say, you ask somebody, do you have a pension with SAG? And everybody said, yeah, sure, that's right. And do you think it's guaranteed? The answer is no, it's not.
But people who support the merger disagree. They say combining SAG and the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, better known as AFTRA, will create one powerful union that will better serve the needs of entertainment workers. The SAG board says the organization has investigated the impact of the merger and determined that there will be no reduction in benefits. Still, Scott Pierce, a former member of the SAG board, is not convinced. He believes the SAG board isn't being honest about the repercussions of the merger.
I think what they're saying, that they have conducted a feasibility study, is misinformation. It borders on, I think, criminal.
SAG would not comment on the protesters' claims. For the merger to pass, 60% of both SAG and AFTRA members must vote it through. In 1999 and 2003, the merger was voted down.
The Screen Actors Guild has a better pension plan, has a better health plan,
and that by combining those two plans, SAG members would lose because AFTRA's plans are not as solvent as Screen Actors Guild.
Why do they want to merge in the first place?
Well, if you listen to what they say strength in numbers.
SAG currently represents the interests of 120,000 actors. AFTRA represents 70,000 actors, broadcasters, DJs, singers, and dancers. A joint SAG-AFTRA union would be one of the largest unions in the entertainment industry. This is Conrad Wilton, Annenberg Radio News.
The redistricting process in Los Angeles may soon be headed for the courtroom. The Los Angeles Redistricting Commission voted late last night to approve the redrawn city council maps. The maps are still waiting for approval from both the city council and the mayor. The new maps dramatically affect two South LA districts, CD8, represented by Bernard Parks, and CD9, by Jan Perry. Both city council members are vowing to file a lawsuit over the new boundaries. Melissa Reynolds has the story.
The changes in the two districts will cause them both to lose the economic engines that drive them. CD9, represented by Jan Perry, will lose downtown. CD8, represented by Bernard Parks, will lose Limerick Park and Baldwin Hills. Without them, Districts 8 and 9 will be among the poorest of all city council districts. Also, the University of Southern California will be moved from CD8 to CD9. Why? Councilman Park says he couldn't identify a single community member who asked for that change.
And what I thought was amazing was that no one had come to the committee or the commission from either the 8th or 9th district and said in that area or stakeholder that should be moved.
In fact, Parks accuses the commission of drawing the maps before getting crucial community input.
They decided the maps were worthy of more weight than the public comment that was overwhelming in three meetings that said leave the 8th district alone.
The Redistricting Commission's website says there would be at least 20 public hearings. So far, there have only been 15 held during January and February of this year. The public has been able to submit its own maps. There's a page at the Redistricting Committee website for that. But the maps that were produced at the very beginning of the process didn't change very much, despite citizen submissions and the public meetings. In Parks District, there were three meetings.
The real meetings were in secret. They just kind of placated the public by showing up and discussing or letting people talk.
Both Parks and Perry have said they think that this is payback because they didn't support 10th Council District Representative Herb Wesson's bid for city council president.
I'm too old to be punished. The issue is they're punishing people that don't need to be punished. So if their goal is to punish the community, these lines will be in place for 10 years. They've created two districts, the 8th and the 9th, with no resources and a bunch of poor people.
Wesson's press secretary wouldn't comment, but Wesson has denied that this is payback. Parks and Perry have pledged to bring a lawsuit under the Voting Rights Act. Melissa Runnels, Annenberg Radio News.
Another LAUSD teacher was arrested this morning on sex crime charges. The arrest is yet another blemish on the school district, the second largest in the country, and is the latest chapter in a string of sex scandals involving teachers. But as Rosalie Murphy reports, it may take years to convict these teachers in a court of law.
Today's revelations about Gabriela Cortez, a Spanish teacher at Theodore Roosevelt High School in Boyle Heights, are the latest in a long month of sex abuse allegations against LAUSD teachers. They started last month when Miramonte Elementary School teacher Mark Burnt was arrested and then charged with 23 counts of lewd acts involving students. Soon another Miramonte teacher was arrested. Then there was a Chatsworth janitor, a Crenshaw High School teacher, and a high school athletic assistant. And now that the superintendent has ordered a review of all the district's discipline cases, more could surface. Sandy Gibbons is communications director for the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office, and she says trying all these teachers could take anywhere from 6 months to 10 years.
It depends on his attorney wants more time to go over the charges. It depends on the motions filed with the court. It depends on the length of trial. It depends on the length of preliminary hearing. And there's no timetable other than a defendant has certain rights.
But Farrell Menon, an associate professor of social work at the University of Southern California, is more worried about how this last month has affected kids.
All of the hoopla and, you know, people coming to the school and they're moving all the teachers. And it seemed to me that they were not doing a lot to try to make this as good as possible for the kids.
Miramonte Elementary School reassigned its entire staff after the second teacher was arrested this month.
We're now painting teachers as terrible people who prey on kids, and that's just, most teachers are good and dedicated people. It seems a little bit like...
Court proceedings are just starting for Mark Burnt, that first Miramonte teacher, who pled not guilty on all his counts yesterday. Gibbons says officials can't know when they will end.
As far as the trial goes, it could be a long trial, it could be a short trial. It depends on the witnesses. There's too many variables.
But the longer that trial takes, Menon says, the easier it is for the defense, and the harder it becomes for the children who will have to testify.
Children are difficult witnesses. You know, let's say you have a 12-year-old on the stand, and he's telling a story the way he experienced it when he was. The whole conception of time and circumstances and all that is very different. And so you look to a jury as if you are not telling the truth because you don't tell it. You can't remember it as a time passing is really good for the defense attorney.
More allegations may arise in coming months, but for the students involved now, this is only the beginning. Rosalie Murphy, Annenberg Radio News.
And now for the weather. We'll have clear skies tonight with lows in the 60s. Tomorrow will be another beautiful day. Clear skies, highs in the mid-70s, and lows in the 50s. Sunny weather should continue through Saturday with highs in the upper 60s and an overnight low of 48. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we find out what some Angelenos have given up for Lent. Police Chief Charlie Beck is stepping into a political firestorm, the issuing of driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants. Lucas Alexander has the story.
Police Chief Beck announced that he believes undocumented immigrants should be allowed to drive just like the rest of us. Maybe not standard licenses, he says, but some kind of proof of identification and the proper skills it takes to operate a motor vehicle. Niels Fronzen is an immigration and law expert at USC.
I think it's a recognition of a public safety issue that people who live in the United States drive, and let's create a mechanism by which we can test them and make sure they're safe drivers.
Beck says that this change will decrease the number of hit-and-run accidents because undocumented immigrants wouldn't fear being caught at the scene of an accident without a license. Others, however, are not so keen on this idea.
Overall, someone who's going to flee from an accident, whether they have a license or not, is going to flee from an accident.
Jim Gilchrist is the founder and president of the Minuteman Project.
The problem I have is that it's promoting lawlessness from another side, and that's encouraging illegal immigration. That if you come here illegally and you violate our U.S. immigration policy, well, there's little to worry about because we'll even let you get a driver's license.
Although, Fronzen is convinced there is a greater draw to American soil than a driver's license.
If we want to have a debate about what brings people to the United States without legal documents, it's not the availability or non-availability of driver's licenses. It's the fact that American employers hire people.
In the end, such a provision can only be passed through the state legislature. Lucas Alexander, Annenberg Radio News.
Outgoing Mayor Antonio Villagrosa will be the chairman of the Democratic National Convention for 2012. The appointment is not the mayor's first on the national scene. He's already served atop the National Conference of Mayors and was just named one of the co-chairs of President Obama's re-election campaign. Many think he may be looking for a gig in D.C. when his second term as mayor ends the next year. I had a chance to speak with USC professor Sherry Jaffe, a political campaign expert, about why Villagrosa is a good fit for the DNC.
The selection of Mayor Villaraigosa as the chair of the Democrats' 2012 convention really signals the president's desire to reach out to Latino voters, to motivate Latino voters. Mayor Villaraigosa has developed the national connections that will come in handy to reach out for the president and to stand in the president's stead as a surrogate with the Latino community.
Yes, but Dr. Jeffy, the Latino community as a whole is often characterized as being socially conservative. And with the mayor's widely publicized extramarital affair with a TV news reporter, how do you think that's going to play out in terms of his perception amongst Latino voters?
Well, it's interesting. At least around L.A. and within California, the spotlight seems to have cooled on the mayor's personal life. It doesn't mean that questions about his social values will not be asked. But throughout our political system today, if you look at it, these personal peccadillos, if you will, mm-hmm. don't seem to be as important with voters as they once were.
And yeah, what about voters? If you recall a 2009 LA Magazine headline, the pop star mayor, or so much promise, so much disappointment, some of those headlines. How do you think Angelino voters are perceiving the mayor today?
I think that the LA Magazine headline really does capture the way many Angelinos feel about the mayor. He came in on a promise of hope and change. Does that sound familiar? And in his almost two terms in City Hall, there is a perception out there that he really hasn't accomplished what he had promised to do.
So what's next for our fine mayor? We see him going to be the chair of the Democratic National Convention. What's next for our mayor? I mean, what do you see?
Well, in 2013, he is termed out of the mayor's office, and there's been some speculation that he will move from there if President Obama is reelected into a cabinet position. The betting, if there is such a thing, is on the Department of Transportation, because in terms of concrete accomplishments, those are the most visible here.
That was Dr. Sherry Bevich-Jeffy of the USC Price School of Public Policy. With one day gone and 39 days left, Catholics have had a day to reflect on the significance of Lent in their lives. For many religious believers, Lent is a time of fasting that prepares them for Christ's resurrection on Easter Sunday. And for others, it's a time of self-reflection, to choose to give up on something that they enjoy doing. Leonard Jimenez talked with members of the community about what they're giving up this season.
So for Lent, I'm going to give up sweets, which would include any kind of junk food or candy, cakes, cupcakes, donuts, all of the above. Trying to focus my Lent decision on a healthier lifestyle and something that's challenging because I'm really a candy-holic. So I think that's going to be a good choice for me to challenge myself and my discipline for this month.
I'm observing Lent, and I'm giving up eating in my car so I can go ahead and slow down and enjoy my food.
In Armenian cultures, we give up meat, dairy products, and alcoholic beverages for Lent.
What I would give up this year is French fries. I like my French fries, but I think it would be something that would be good to give up. And also, well, of course, on Fridays, I always eat fish, no regular meat.
We heard from Lauren Oxner, Ronnie Fernandez, Suzanne Sarkazian, and Max Molina. We need to check in with Jennifer Kendall to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, Ben. We have a great show for everyone tonight. We've had reporters all over Los Angeles. Some breaking news coming out tonight. There was another teacher arrested at Roosevelt High School. It was Gabrielle Cortez was arrested on charges of sexual molestation. There were also some problems on the Metro this morning. Commuters had to wait up to 2 hours as the Blue Line Metro was repaired, and their delays will continue into the evening rush. We have all that, and we have a lot more on tonight's show coming up at 6 p.m.
Jennifer, thank you so much. Well, that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Madeline Lindsay. Esther Kang is our producer. Emily Frost is our executive producer. And from all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb. Take care.